You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to October. It is October 1st, and we are kicking off our first show of the month as we kicked off the very first show of the year, going back to January 1st, which just so happened to be a Saturday night. Welcome to TPC. I'm James Edwards, along with Keith Alexander. We're going to London right now to bring back to our listening audience our favorite former member of European Parliament, Nick Griffin, who is returning to the broadcast to discuss the coming winter in Europe and so much more this hour. So let's get right to it. How are things in London tonight, Nick? We have a lot to talk to you about.
It's cold and wet, James, and there's not much good going on in Britain, but never mind. I'm sure we'll have a good evening.
We'll make everybody feel better about the dreariness by the time we get finished with this hour. At least that's going to be the plan. So you've actually been booked for tonight for several weeks. We were talking about this just a moment ago before we went live, and so much has happened since we scheduled this appearance. But the first thing I want to talk about tonight is what we had intended to talk about originally, and that is the coming winter in Europe and the rising cost of energy there. So for weeks now, we've been hearing conflicting reports about who is going to suffer the most in Europe this winter. I've read headlines, checkmate, Russia is about to freeze Western Europe by withholding oil and gas. And then I've read another one, checkmate, Western Europe is about to starve Russia by withholding the economic revenue that would have otherwise been generated from the sale of its natural resources. So what in the world is actually going on there, Nick? Who stands to win this high-stakes standoff?
Well, what's going on, of course, is not that Russia is starving the West of energy. The Russians are still meeting all the contracts that they're obliged to do, but the West is refusing to take their energy and then saying it's not coming because the Russians aren't sending it. So lots of propaganda from the normal mainstream media liars. And it's getting pretty grim. I mean, Germany last year got 55% of all the gas it uses, and that's its main source of energy these days, from Russia, and they're now not getting any of it. And we think in terms of how fast this is moving. Since we exchanged emails yesterday, the price of gas, now here we're talking not about petrol, diesel, you know, for cars, we're talking about gas for heating and energy and so on. Price of gas in Britain in the last 24 hours has gone up 27%.
Wow. Since yesterday.
Let me ask you this real quickly. The Baltic pipeline, does anybody know how much that is going to supply to Germany?
Well, it was going to supply a very large amount of it. Probably, I don't know how much because it was on course to keep on increasing. So obviously they were still going to get the gas through the pipelines that went through Poland and Ukraine. This was going to be extra. But certainly, even if the Ukrainians and the Lithuanians and so on had shut off their pipelines, if Nord Stream 1 and 2 had been completed, then the gas that Germany relied on or has been relying on for its to keep its economic miracle going would have come through Nord Stream 1 and 2. But and of course, the Germany needs this energy far more than it used to, because for the last 10 years or so, an alliance of the various bits of the German elite, pressured particularly by the Greens, they destroyed Germany's coal industry, and they've made sure that the nuclear power is wound down. So they're the ones who've made Germany so dependent on Russian gas, and now they're the ones who simply turned it off with their insane war.
All right. I want to talk to you. You have actually written an article just this week about the situation with the Nord Stream pipeline. I'm going to get to that in the next segment. I want to take this as quickly as we can, but as chronologically responsibly as we can. You were talking about what a remarkable statement you made, too, by the way. 27% increase since you and I were emailing one another yesterday. And it seems as though there has been an increase throughout the last several weeks. Now, I have seen things online on social media where mom and pop businesses or homeowners are posting their utility bills, and one month it's $50, the next month it's £50, thereabouts, and the next month it's £1,000 or more. So, two questions. Number one, is that true? And are you experiencing anything like that? And what is up, if so, with this astronomical jump for the cost of energy in the UK and in Western Europe?
Well, yes, it's entirely true. The British government, just a few days ago, it's one of the reasons the pound has crashed, because they've said that, in effect, they're going to bail out households to a very large amount. So our household energy costs are only going up, I think, a couple of times, you know, 200% or so. And they're not going to go up 1,000%, as we were being told. But that bailout does not at present apply to small businesses. Therefore, is indeed the mom and the pops and the pubs and so on are looking at being obliterated by this. It's not the months ahead, really. Now it's in the weeks ahead. It's a total catastrophe, and this is every single country across Central and Western Europe. Got past a good gauge is the fact that the price of firewood has gone up by a factor of 5 or 6 times in Britain. One of the main things of home improvement now is people putting wood-burning stoves. That's how scared people are getting.
So, Nick, here's the thing, and here's the million-dollar question. Now, your opinion is just that. It's an informed opinion. I mean, you keep your ear to the ground. You've been involved in elected office over there, high-ranking elected office. But things like this are what causes governments to fall. When people can't feed themselves, when people can't keep their children warm, I wonder, and what's your opinion on what the situation looks like in Europe come springtime? I mean, how bad and how big could this get over the course of a very long and dark winter?
Could this bring down NATO totally?
Certainly it can bring down governments. I mean, there's already enormous demonstrations in particularly Germany, and demonstrations of tens of thousands of people, not just in one place, but in city after city after city across the country on the same day. So beyond the capability of the police to control if it gets out of hand. And they're growing also in particularly Spain, in Italy, vast demonstrations against the government and for a rapprochement with Russia and the Czech Republic. So it really is something pretty big. And this has got the capacity to become, in effect, revolutionary, right the way across Europe. There's simply no doubt about it. This is absolutely unprecedented. The people are already scared. They're already angry. And this is before old pensioners have started dying in their homes and families have started dying in fires because, they're using unsafe gas appliances and all the rest of it. There's going to be tragedies and there's going to be a great deal of anger. And this could redraw the political map of Europe.
Let me ask you this. Everybody knows that has an informed opinion that this was Biden and his administration that bombed or blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. Now, what are the people of NATO going to do? Are they going to basically kick NATO out and, like you said, have rapprochement with Russia? Or what do you think?
Ponder that question in your mind, Nick, because we are reaching our first break of the evening. Joining us live from London, burning the midnight oil, as he is always so generous to do, is Nick Griffin, the one and only former member of European Parliament. We'll be right back with you.
Family, it's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation organization also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
That's good stuff. That rainy day feeling. Hey, listen, here in the American South, it's very pleasant this time of year. Over in Northern Europe, it's starting to get cold and winter is setting in. Nick mentioned it being rainy and a little dreary over there in the UK already. And we're talking about the energy crisis right now that Europe is facing as a result of this conflict in Eastern Europe. And so further exacerbating it all, Nick, of course, is the tension. Further exacerbating the tension is the situation with the Nord Stream pipeline that Keith was asking you about just before the break. It was destroyed this week. I mean, curious timing that is, to say the least.
Who else could it be? Anybody that's got a lick of sense knows it's Biden.
Well, Nick wrote an article about it. Share your thoughts from that article, Nick, and how people can find it.
Well, the crux of it is that that pipeline has been destroyed, obviously, by the U.S. deep state or people working at their behest in order to deny Germany the choice of rapprochement with Russia and reopening the pipelines. So what's the point of demonstrating, as they have been and as they were going to do in huge numbers, to reopen the pipelines when they're not there anymore? So that's why it's been done. Now, that trick would only work if the German people in particular believe what their mass media is telling them. And I'm told that the hashtags trending, despite all the social media censorship, the hashtags trending in Germany for the last 24 hours have been things like leave NATO, sanction the USA. You know, people know what's going on.
Yeah, what is Olaf Schlaf going to do about this now? You know, I think he was basically telling people, just give me a little bit of time, another month or something, and we'll get this resolved. And now their escape hatch has closed totally.
Well, Nick, before you answer that, I was going to say, and you already answered the question, but I want to share with the audience what I was going to ask you, just as a point of emphasis, that rumors had persisted that Russia could have been considering to resupply nations like Germany with oil and gas if Germany would agree to withhold war materials to Ukraine. And you're basically saying that that could have been the situation, but now, of course, that has been
bail out of NATO.
Yeah. There's rumors that there were a lot of high-level secret discussions between Berlin and Moscow about that. And again, it wasn't really whether Russia would start resupplying the gas. It's if the Germans would say, yes, we'll take it, and yes, we'll pay for
good
it.
Point.
That's all that was
good
necessary.
Point. Okay, that's a good point. All right, but continue on with some of your thoughts and opinions in this article. And the title of the article is Nord Stream, the signal that Washington has lost the great game. And will that be published? Has it been published yet?
It hasn't been published yet because the Saker who would have published it. He lives in Florida, and his house and his office has been completely washed away.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm not yet sure. It might appear in the Strategic Culture Foundation or on the UNS Review. It will come out over the next day or so. I'm absolutely sure of that. So the crux of it is everyone's still thinking, oh, this shows how, you know, wicked the American deep state is, and this is about their determination to control the world. And I'm saying, no, actually, that's not quite right. It's moved beyond that, because if they wanted to take on the American, Chinese, Indian, the rising rest of the world, as opposed to the Anglo-Zionist sphere, then they would need a powerful Germany. If they're going to take on even Russia alone in a conventional war, nuclear war is unthinkable, everybody dies. So if they're going to take them on in a conventional war, they need a powerful Germany. That's why they rebuilt Germany with the Marshall Plan at the end of the Second World War. They're now not doing that. They're deliberately destroying Germany and Europe. So what that tells me is they've given up on the idea of controlling the world. They know that their part of the world is shrinking to the sort of the 15%. That's the Five Eyes, the Anglo bits, plus the European Union and Japan and South Korea. They know it's shrinking. And because it's shrinking, America has to be the top dog, the only effective industrial power in that. That's why they're destroying Germany. So it tells me they already know they've lost the struggle for world hegemony. Thank God for that.
Well, I think you're right that they want to be the one hegemon. I think if America thinks it's going to be them, they're whistling past the graveyard. That may happen for a week, and then they'll find out that Israel is the real hegemon.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, Americans are not in control of America. Biden is an anti-American,
yes,
and an anti-white. Our government's policies are anti-American, just as your government's policies are anti-British. We all suffer under this misrule of anti-white governments, which pursue the interests of other people and work against our own people's interests. So, and that's something
run
by
the usual suspects.
Well, that's what. Listen, that's something we all need to recognize. And so, but yes, Nick. I mean, this situation with the pipeline. How much do you think this incident escalates things to the next level? Now, in the next segment, we're going to talk about some of the other things going on out in the world today. But still focusing on the pipeline. How much does this sort of raise the stakes in what's going on?
Well, it doesn't make any financial difference to Russia whatsoever, because the pipeline's already been paid for. Most of the cost of it actually is going to be borne by the German Finnish taxpayers. And no gas was going through either of the pipelines. None ever went through Nord Stream 2. Nord Stream 1 hasn't put any gas through it since the start of August. So Russia's not going to lose financially. And in fact, because the gas prices have gone up worldwide, the gas that they are selling to Asia is earning more money than they were before. So it doesn't make that much difference from that point of view. The people it makes a difference to, again, I come back, it's Germany are going to suffer hugely. And the crux of it is that the whole of German industry relies on the BASF chemical plants. They produce all the feedstock. Basically, German industry won't work without them. And they've said that they're very close now to simply closing down. And if they shut down these plants, they don't even know if they can ever restart them again. They've never been shut down since they were first built these now in the early 1960s. So it is deindustrializing Germany. That's what's at stake here. And it now appears basically there's nothing that can be done to stop it. It's very successful. And you say, you know, Biden obviously doesn't work for America. We know that. But America is going to benefit to a degree here, because the American huge business is now making vast profits from selling liquefied natural gas to Europe, because we can't get our gas from Russia anymore. Huge numbers of big German companies are now looking really seriously to relocate to the USA, because it's the only place they can get cheap energy. So the deindustrialization of Germany and a temporary bit of an uptick, actually, for American industry.
Don't make the mistake, though, Nick, of thinking that the American government is trying to work for the economic
of course not.
America. No, the thing is, the first thing that Biden did was shut down the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to make a hatful of money selling whatever little bit of liquefied gas they can get over on cargo ships and things like this to Europe. It's like I think you're right about the hegemonic aspect of it all. They basically want to destroy Russia as a regional hegemon, and then the next one would be China. And if they do that, they think they're going to wind up at the top of the world.
Well, let me ask you this, Nick.
Of course.
Yeah, go ahead and respond, please.
Yeah, can I just come in something which is also related to this, and people are tending to lose sight of it, that the Biden administration, the European Union people, the British government, etc., they are all, before we got all, they all got carried away with the Ukraine thing, their big thing was the green agenda and decarbonizing our world. And
climate change, cultism.
And a large amount of the energy pain that we're all now suffering is actually nothing to do with the Ukraine business and so on. Britain only got 4% of its gas from Russia. So this is about the fact they've destroyed our coal industry. They've not allowed our gas industry to develop. They've strangled our nuclear power industry. Therefore, we're running out of power anyway. And this way, this is still, the green agenda is energy and civilizational suicide. But this way, it appears to be suicide by Russia instead of suicide by the green agenda. And that obviously is a little bit more saleable. With enough war, hysteria, propaganda and lies, they think they can sell that to the public in a way that they couldn't sell the green agenda. So there's a lot of that going on. As I say, it's economic energy suicide by Russia is what our elites are playing at. And Biden, as we know, is as bad on that as anyone in Europe.
Well, I got to ask you this very quickly. Do you see a scenario in which Germany and Russia become allies? I mean, wouldn't that be something?
Well, that scenario has been on the cards since before the First World War, which is why the American deep state, even then, and giant big business did so much to spark the First World War and the Second World War as well. It's always been the great fear of the Anglosphere, in fact, that Russia and Germany would get together. So they're natural partners. They won't get together while Germany is ruled by a Zionist occupation government, which is what they got at present.
If they get rid of that,
everything will change.
Hear, hear. Well, see, Putin grovels before the Zionists. So does Trump.
Well,
they all hate him.
I mean, come on.
I know, but the thing is, see, what we need is a Nuremberg trial for all the climate cultists.
Well, okay, hang on now. Hey, I would say, Keith, if I would agree with you at all on that statement, it is to vastly varying degrees. But we'll be back with Nick Griffin, the former member of European Parliament and lifelong advocate and champion of our people. We'll be right back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Maruso reporting. North Korea fired two short-range ballistic missiles toward the sea off its east coast on Saturday, hours before South Korea staged a large military show displaying stealth fighters and its own missiles. Pyongyang's fourth launch in a week comes amid a flurry of military muscle flexing by the countries in the region, including joint anti-submarine exercises on Friday by the navies of South Korea, the U.S., and Japan. Vice President Kamala Harris visited the region this week, meeting with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol in Seoul on Thursday. The rival Koreas are in a regional arms race that has seen a major increase of weapons and military spending. Marking South Korea's 74th Armed Forces Day, Yoon condemned what he called recent military provocations by the North and vowed to strengthen joint military drills with the U.S. In a rare softening of hostile relations, the White House said Saturday that Venezuela freed seven Americans imprisoned in the South American country, and the United States released two nephews of President Nicolas Maduro's wife, who had been jailed for years on drug smuggling convictions. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin hosted a bond-building meeting between the U.S. and Indo-Pacific allies. Lloyd telling the defense leaders from Philippines, Japan, and Australia at Camp Smith in Hawaii, nations like China, Russia, and North Korea are trying to intimidate the rest of the world through bullying and fear. Austin saying peace in the region is at risk.
But today, that vision is threatened by autocratic countries that peddle disinformation and defy international rules and rely on coercion and intimidation.
She returned on Thursday after visiting the DMZ and the funeral for former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. This is USA Radio News.
Paid for by government.com.
Have you heard? The United States Mint has issued the Morgan Silver Dollar for the first time in 100 years. Not only that, but they are also minted in 99.9% pure silver for the first time ever in history. Coin experts are calling this an amazing opportunity for anyone that knows the enduring popularity of Morgans. But you must hurry. Only 175,000 legal tender silver dollars were issued. These Morgan Silver Dollars are brand new, bright and shiny legal tender coins minted by the iconic Philadelphia Mint. Just call 1-800-888-7630 and you are guaranteed a new 99.9% pure silver Morgan dollar. The first time in history this has happened. But with limited quantities, you must call now to order. To learn more, call 1-800-888-7630. If you order now, you will receive a free collector bonus, a $25 value free with every order. Call 1-800-888-7630 now to secure your new Morgan silver dollars before they are gone. That's 1-800-888-7630.
Well, I've told you once and I've told you twice, but you never listen to my advice. You don't try very hard to please me, but what you know, it should be easy. Well, this could be the last time. This could be the last time.
Well, if it does escalate to nuclear war, it will be the last time, and it is great to have back with us tonight our longtime friend, the former member of European Parliament, and so much more than that, Nick Griffin, who always accommodates our audience by staying up late, well after midnight, to appear on this program live, as we are always live, unrehearsed and uncensored. So, Nick, I really want to speed things up this segment. We've got a lot to cover in this segment. And then we're going to try to end the hour on a little bit of good news. But I think the flow has been very steady so far, and I'm pleased with that because we had a lot to unpack. How near are we to a global conflict? So things have really – there's been some interesting situations.
Are we in one already?
Well, we are in one already, but recent developments have made things even more murky. So you have now the Ukrainian territories that were annexed by Russia in the last few days, Zelensky signing on to join NATO in some sort of a fast-track application. So where does that put us now?
I've got to say, James, you cannot use the word annexed. Those territories were not annexed. That implies, you know, stolen, taken away against the will of their population. And they've had those referenda there. Friends of mine were there moderating, checking them and so on. And, of course, the Russian-speaking people of the Donbass want to be back with Russia because they don't want to be tortured by Zionist neo-Nazi scumbags. Simple as that.
So they repatriated then, right?
Yeah,
so,
what's the word I should have used? I will take that correction.
They've gone home.
I will take that correction in the spirit as intended. Perhaps I used the wrong word. Yes, I agree with you about what happened over there. All right, but how close? How much closer does all of these events get us to the next level of this conflict?
It's clearly a lot closer because it's not. Will we see a global conflict? As Keith said, there we're already in one. You know, it's by some estimates a third of the Ukrainians attacking forces, and they are still attacking, it's quite remarkable, but a third of them are actually basically NATO mercenaries. So this is already, it's not a proxy war anymore with Ukrainians fighting for NATO. There's large numbers of NATO forces fighting in Ukraine. And of course, there's a serious possibility it could escalate to a nuclear war. But I think when people say, oh, you know, the American elite, they want a nuclear war to kill us all off. If they wanted a nuclear war, they could already have one. And in fact, every time it really gets really tense with Russia, they blink. If you think back 48 hours ago, that there was going to be a really fierce press statement by NATO, you know, in response to the annexation. And the press conference actually just said, well, we're not going to war and really we don't want Ukraine joining NATO. So not even the crazies running and ruining the United States of America actually want a nuclear war. If we get that, it'll be by accident. But there's a really serious chance that accident could happen. And who knows, when you look at the disgusting state of the Western world, perhaps this is a God-given thing, and Russian fire and brimstone is the way the thing is going to be cleansed, because the citizens of Sodom and Gomorrah would have been appalled to have been twinned with modern-day Britain and Europe.
Well, I think I know how to end the whole conflict, Nick. You know how to do that? send the American military over there, and between the transgenders, the lesbians, and the soy boys, the Ukrainians will surrender.
I think the poor Russians might laugh themselves to death.
Believe me, I have seen these so-called soldiers, and America doesn't want an on-the-ground conflict. Now, you mentioned something, the referendum. Now, it was so rich for me to watch the controlled American media call these sham elections. So rich of the United States of all places to talk about sham elections after our own disaster, the 2020 presidential election, not to mention the fact that the United States is engaged in color revolutions all over the world, including in Ukraine. And so I do believe this referendum, or these referendums, as you mentioned, to be legitimate. Again, how is Putin going to use this going forward, and how much has these votes changed things in terms of the alignment right now? I mean, who's controlling these areas?
The crux of it is that the majority of the Donbass is now firmly in Russian hands. And it's going to stay that way. And that means that basically they've now got some 80% of Ukraine's pre-war gross domestic product under their control, because it's the industrial heartland, or was the industrial heartland of Ukraine. And it's also where all the really good fertile soil is. So Europe and NATO have now got themselves a basket case in economic terms for a proxy state. And the good bits have gone back to Russia. So that's really important for the long term. Obviously, there is still fighting. The Ukrainians have just taken the city of, or the town of, Lyman. It's very, very strange, this. Some 15,000 NATO troops have finally pushed the Russians to pull out their 2,000. But the strange thing is, this has been seen for weeks. And the Russians haven't done anything about it. What is going on? So either it's grotesque incompetence, or, and people will say this is a cope, is this in fact like a mini Verdun? In the First World War, the Germans could have taken Verdun in eastern France. They didn't. They left it as a salient, knowing the French would pour their forces in there, and they would, the Germans called it the meat grinder, is where the phrase was first used, and they would grind them into dust. So is that in fact what the Russians are doing? Because they developed this thing, they're willing to give up bits of territory rather than suffer casualties. The Ukrainians and NATO rush into them, and then they're devastated by the massively superior Russian artillery and air power. So I don't know what's going on there, but absolutely clearly the Russians are not going to lose that war on the ground. That's put about, you know, Putin's being defeated. It's a hell of a defeat to take four whole provinces, basically, and 80% of your opponent's GDP. That's coming from the same people as told us that COVID was going to kill us all, and that wearing masks would do anything
about
it.
There you go. Now we're talking.
And that the vaccinations were a damn good thing. It's the same liars telling us a different set of lies.
Well, I've got a different metaphor for you. It's not Verdun. It's liable to be Dunkirk without all the little boats coming up in the Ukraine.
Hey, let me ask you this, Nick, or let me just first say this and then ask you a
Dunkirk
question.
Dunkirk for the Ukrainians.
And we've got about 2 minutes remaining in this segment. There is no propaganda like war propaganda. So you're reading all kinds of things over here in America, all kinds. If you believe our controlled media, then you believe that Putin is suffering from every form of cancer known to man simultaneously. I actually just read an article this week from an establishment press mouthpiece that said that Putin's alleged cancer is so advanced that he's nearly blind. But as we always say, who are you going to believe, the media or your lying eyes?
I think he's the most hated Russian since Rasputin.
Well, Putin, hey, here's the thing. Of course, I don't believe any of that. Putin gave a very good speech this week in which he accused the United States of being outright satanic, and it's hard to argue with that. America has become an evil and wicked place, as you mentioned. There is no form of degeneracy that our elites refuse to embrace. Everything Russia has been accused of doing, America has done far worse. What did you think of the Putin speech, Nick?
I think it's the speech of the century so far. It's absolutely outstanding.
Wow.
And, you know, I wrote down a little quote for people who have perhaps haven't heard it, but hear this before we go finish this section, and then go and find the speech for yourself, people. He said that this is a complete, this is talking about America and the LGBT, etc. This is a complete denial of humanity, the overthrow of faith and traditional values. Indeed, the suppression of freedom itself has taken on the features of a religion, outright Satanism. That's from Putin. That's what he said. And the rest of the speech was similar.
The modern face of evil.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. But he's got really going to the root of it, that it's, you know, the liberalism, it's ideology and so on. The bottom of all this is actually something far, far darker and deeper.
That's right.
And he's named it as satanic. And no other world leader would ever have done that. It's something quite outstanding.
I think it is. People do need to find that. You can, of course, find it with the captioning and the transcription into English or whatever your native tongue may be. And it is remarkable. You're calling it the speech of the century. Now, that puts it up against your speech to European Parliament, which was quite good in its own right, and as we've covered many times on this program in your previous appearances. But that is a high praise.
Well, can you think of any speech which has come anywhere near saying what he said in Moscow the other day? It's, you know, certainly
his grandma used to say he called a spade a dirty shovel.
It really was, all kidding and joking, it was remarkable. And I think he threw down the gauntlet. It was...
It was a masterpiece. And the other remarkable thing is the response from that huge Moscow crowd.
Okay, now that's another thing
he was telling them, look, we're at war with the West here. And there was from that crowd, there's no hesitation, there's no fear. There's yes, you know, let's go. Bring it on.
That's more of the propaganda from the West, that the people are not behind Putin and Russia, that his military
all the military is deserting. The guys are fleeing across borders and whatnot.
Are you buying or selling that, Nick?
Well, I know that there's quite a lot of Russian Jews that just ended up in Tel Aviv because they didn't want to fight for Russia. That is for sure.
Yeah, they'll fight this war to the last Slav, but not the first Jew.
Okay, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk with Nick. We're going to shift gears to something that I hope might be a little more positive, but we'll get his take on that, and that is the elections in Italy. A pretty abrupt change, but we'll be right back.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
This is a battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com. We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. FreedomFactor.org.
Accentuating the negative so far, but we're going to ask Nick Griffin this segment, our esteemed guest, are we into something good? Is something good on the horizon? But before we do that, I've got to ask Nick a question. I have intended to ask him this question before. Now, we're covering all of these trivial topics like the prospects of World War III, but I got to get serious here and ask him a serious question. And that is, Nick, who
if you had to pick one, would be your favorite band of the British invasion of the 1960s?
Oh, whew. Probably the Small Faces.
There's a lot of stiff competition.
Go for the Small Faces.
Boy, he's getting obscure.
Wow.
That's right.
That's pretty obscure, yes. I'll tell you the worst, the most overrated band in British pop history. That's the bloody Beatles.
Oh, there he is.
The Bloody Beatles. Somebody needs to come up with a cover band called the Bloody Beatles.
I got to say, Nick, I love you. I do like some of the early selections of the McCartney-Lennon songbook, but I was thinking you might be a rock guy. I was thinking you might be Stones. You might be Jerry and the Pacemakers because of all the palpitations.
No, come on. I'm not that old.
Freddie and the Dreamers. I will tell you this. I'm a pop guy. And Keith knows this. This isn't a joke. The only thing – I was born in 1980, okay? Only thing I listen to is 50s and 60s early.
He's the only Southern doo-wop guy that I know.
I like the doo-wop stuff. But if I had to pick one, I'm a Herman's Hermits man. I'm a Peter Noon guy, Nick.
Okay. We'll let you off. I'm more of a folk and country man myself. I'm more of a folk and country man with a little bit of late 1970s punk thrown in as well.
All right. Well, there he is. Hey, listen, he's answered on the record. So what more can we ask? I would say one thing, though, about the topic we were previously covering. There may be something to people are asking, why hasn't Putin ended this already? You're only a couple of weeks away from the midterm elections here in the United States. And if the Republicans do retake control, as bad as they are, if they do retake control, there is a good chance that they would stop this $10 billion a month to Ukraine or whatever that we've got here under the Obama regime. So that's something to consider.
Well, let me make one comment, too.
Very quickly.
If NATO were to implode, that would work for Trump. Trump would say, well, I was wanting to disband NATO during my first term. That would be the answer to so many problems in Europe and Asia.
Well, okay, give me a 30-second answer on that, Nick, if you don't mind. Do you think that there is something to Putin's strategy that is sort of waiting and seeing what happens here in November?
Yeah, well, bear in mind, the Russians aren't in a hurry. They are now demilitarizing not just Ukraine, they're demilitarizing the whole of NATO. You've got defense ministries and so on all over Europe screaming, don't send any more of our armaments to Ukraine because we can't even defend ourselves. So the Russians can grind this out because they're making lots of money with the price of energy being so high. So it'll go on. So they're not just waiting until November. If there is a Biden election disaster, that will benefit them, no doubt. But whatever happens in November, this thing will go on. And the pain inflicted on Central and Western Europe this winter is potentially absolutely enough to break NATO, or at least to break the governments which are supporting NATO. So the Russians are playing quite a long game here.
Okay. Now, let's switch gears here. And what I hope will be more encouraging news, and that is, are we seeing...
Dream on, my son, dream on.
Okay, all right, hey, listen, that's why I'm asking the guy in Europe. I was talking with Sam Dixon earlier.
I'm just waiting for Europe to decide they're no longer going to take advice from a blithering old bugger like Biden.
Okay, well, that's just it. If somebody in Europe was asking about Ron DeSantis, we're a little bit closer to him than they are, and to that end, Nick Griffin is a little more closer to the players in Europe than we are. So, here's the thing: are we seeing on any levels, Nick, a legitimate rise to power by nationalist parties in Europe? So we had Hold on. The Swedish Democrats seemingly had a breakthrough in Sweden 2 weeks ago. Marine Le Pen came closer ever to winning in France. Over 60% of French voters now believe the great replacement is happening, according to some studies. Viktor Orban decisively won re-election in Hungary, gave a speech in which he condemned race mixing, and he called it that. Orban now is giving speeches at CPAC and is seen as a role model. And now you have Giorgia Meloni, who ran as a Christian, as a nationalist, as a conservative nationalist. And in France,
God, family, and country.
Mainstream conservatives are willing to vote for Meloni and Le Pen now. So here's the question, though. Is it fool's gold, or are any of these people and parties
really changing
the real McCoy?
The good news is that the people are voting for parties they think are really hardline proper nationalists. The bad news is that from Marine Le Pen. It was fine under Jean-Marie, but under Marine Le Pen, what was the Front National is no longer a proper French nationalist party. The Social Democrat, the Swedish Democrats certainly aren't, and nor are the Italian Brothers of Meloni. They are all of them right-wing capitalist conservatives. Meloni, okay. She's a member of the Aspen Institute. Yeah, they're neocons. She's a member of the Aspen Institute now, which is a Rockefeller Gates funded foundation. She's pro mask mandates. She's pro the World Health Organization, pro NATO, pro the EU.
Pro-Jewish.
So much for country. She's pro war. She's pro abortion. And she's moved a few years ago. She went to Syria and she said that Christians in Syria, she told the truth, Christians in Syria have been saved by President Assad and Vladimir Putin against the Western and Zionist bloc.
Globo homo.
And she's moved from that to being a most vehement supporter of Israel. So she's not going to change things. But the important, the good news, I would say, is that the People's Democracy, which was the main party of the hard left, which was the governing party, their votes slumped to 1% in those elections. They've been obliterated. And Meloni's party went up in 2013. They were on less than 2% of the vote. And she's now the biggest party with 27% of the vote. So the Italian people want to live. There's no doubt about it. They're making the right decisions, given the information they've got from the lying mass media. And thereby hangs the problem, because they're still voting for phonies.
Okay. All right. Now, that is an incredibly powerful answer. So here we are. So that's the talk of the town this week, so to speak. Giorgia Meloni, the Brothers of Italy. So Nick, of course, has held a seat in European Parliament. He's a lifer for our cause. He's kept his ear to the ground about the goings-on in Europe. That's more difficult for me to do as an American observer. And he just gave an opinion, his opinion on Giorgia Meloni. Now, I will tell you, Nick, that a collection of some of our regular guests on this program here stateside have had a very energetic debate about her merits, mm-hmm. and there have been pros and there have been cons and there have been straight shots up the middle. Now, I let me ask you this.
Is she Giorgia Meloni or Giorgia Baloney?
Okay. She does seem to heap praise on Israel now and parrot the NATO line on Russia. However, in her younger years, in her youth, she also praised Mussolini. And the question is, I guess, though, does rhetoric really matter if at the end of the day she restricts immigration and raises the European birth rate?
In the end, you know, politics is a very, very dirty business. To get on in politics, you have to, you know, to trim and accept that politics is the art of the possible and not what the hardliners want, which is the impossible. And a council of perfection is usually means you get nothing at all. So, yeah, she's not like some of the others. She's not as bad as the others. Let's at least give her that. And also she is, like Marine Le Pen, a blatant opportunist. So I'm absolutely sure none of these people really love Israel. But she thinks that's what she needs to get on and to cut some slack from the Zionist controlled media, et cetera, et cetera. So as
never
the French,
have you ever noticed that?
As the French Protestant King Henry IV said in the context of the religious wars, when he was a Protestant, he said, Paris is worth a mass. And he became a Catholic in order to get Paris. So it's the same thing. But because these people are opportunists, if the wind really blows the other direction, and when there's hundreds of thousands of Italians about to storm everything in sight because they can't afford to cook their next bowl of pasta, then being an opportunist, she could very easily switch once again to being a hardline nationalist.
See, that's the thing I've always said, Nick. The thing I've always said is when the day comes where our side can inflict, if that's the word I'm looking for, can apply more leverage than our enemies, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't, you know, I would like to have a true believer. I would like to have you. I would like to have Keith. I would like to have our regulars on this program leading governments. However, if we can't get that, I don't care if somebody is an opportunist, so long as they're doing what we would want them to do. And that day will come when we can apply more pressure than the enemy can. And so that's, you know, maybe where we're at.
Absolutely.
Even controlled opposition can become, well, look at Trump. I mean, whether it was inadvertent or not, he has radicalized the white Republican base in this country to such an extent that a lot of opportunities are open here that were forever closed as recently as 7 years ago. So you can get those sort of outcomes rather inadvertently from time to time. So we'll see what comes of her and what good, if any, she can do. And
equally important, Nick, what comes after her?
Yes. Yeah, because either she will have to move with the public, or she's going to become so unpopular that the public will think, well, we want to vote for something that is properly on the right. And there you have, you know, there you have Roberto and Fiore and others waiting in the wings. So it's part of a historical process, isn't it? But we're so close to it, you can't see it. Historians writing these times could well say the election results for the now unknown Meloni actually showed just how unstable Italian politics was going to be. And although we didn't know it, it presaged what happens in 2028. You know, it could be like that. We don't know.
Well, but, you know the saying is,
as I say, the public want to live.
Well, Nick, they say over here, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Putin kisses Jewish behinds. Maloney kisses Jewish behinds. Trump kisses Jewish behinds. The Jews still hate every one of them and will work day and night to undermine them. Einstein said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
I think you're being a little bit harder on Putin than he deserves.
Yeah.
Nick,
I agree with you, James.
All right, hey, listen, let me ask you this one thing. The music is already playing. First of all, I want to thank you again for coming on tonight, my friend. You are always a welcome guest. We look forward to the next time already. We didn't have time to get into this, so give me one word, one adjective on your new king.
How about just question mark?
Maybe we will pick up there next time with the great Nick
Griffin. We can. There'll be a lot to talk about.
All right. Take care, my friend. Stay warm. Hey, listen, if you and Jackie get too cold, there's always a room over here in Tennessee for you. We'll see what energy does over there throughout the rest of the winter. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Cheers, James. Roger. Thanks a lot. God bless.
You either freeze or get blown away in a hurricane. Take your pick.
Hey, Florida, that's terrible. Thank you, Nick Griffin. We'll be back right after this. Stay tuned.